Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's Handy Link. You're listening to Handy Link on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
Welcome to Handy Link, sponsored by the Italian Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that provides recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. I'm your host, Cam Wells.
In this segment of our show, I'll be chatting with George Eyre from St. Therese's Vision for Disability Giftedness.
I'm the founder of St. Therese's Vision for Disability Giftedness. I'm here right now being interviewed in my home in Sudbury, Ontario. I have a bit of a long story, you could say. From my youngest years, my mom was my main advocate for a number of essential exceptionalities that I have, not very well understood. This would have been during the 1980s. So this eventually led me to being diagnosed, I guess, first of all, as a child with a learning disability and various special education programs. But in my adulthood, it finally led me to being diagnosed, which is a long story in and of itself, how I got to this point. But in 2005, I believe it was, with a nonverbal learning disability. So to give you an idea how this affects me in my day-to-day life, I mean, there's an awful lot of knowledge out there about the autism spectrum. But I would say that not nearly as much about nonverbal learning disability. Most people are not very familiar with this particular exceptionality. Generally, it's not discussed nearly as much as typical LDs or the autism spectrum. So I think I'll give a... So let's start off with the nonverbal learning disability. So essentially what it is the brain has two hemispheres, a left and a right hemisphere. And they've actually done some MRIs, not my brain, but I've read in the literature that they have done some MRIs of individuals with a nonverbal learning disability, and they've discovered that there's some damage in the white matter in the right hemisphere of the brain. So I can postulate, I mean, I don't know for certain that that is the case. What I can say is that from my earliest years, I would have been very over-talkative, but I also would have not been very aware of what was going on in my environment. So I'd be kind of like telling my mom, I'm going over here, I'm doing this or that. But I struggled with motor coordination, so I would have, you know, as a preschooler and into my kindergarten probably, I would have preferred a smaller larger Legos as opposed to smaller Legos. There would have probably taken me a little bit longer to, say, ride a bicycle without training wheels. Tying my shoes may have been a little more challenging than the average kindergarten, and so on and so forth. But in terms of my vocabulary and my speaking, I tended to be above and beyond. I also struggled a lot with social skills, and that because with a nonverbal learning disability, our visual, spatial, perceptual abilities are weaker than our language-based abilities. So So what that meant in practicality as a child is you're not reading social cues of your peers. So you can imagine, you know, if you look at Eric Erickson with his psychology models, what that would do to you being in a special education environment sort of back in the 80s where, you know, it was a very ableist kind of environment. So people with in special education were not exactly very well accepted by their peers. And unless you had a developmental disorder, they would have called it something else back then. But today what we would refer to as a developmental disorder, they would have not have put you in a segregated school. They would have kept you in the maybe not on the regular program, but try to gradually integrate you into it. And it was an era of new beginnings in that area because some new legislation had come through here in Canada in the Charter of Rights and Freedoms to add disabilities. And it was quite quickly in the 70s and 80s affecting how they were approaching learning disabilities in the education system.
So what are some of the most common challenges faced today by people with disabilities coming into your outreach?
Well, I have had an opportunity to be able to see people with disabilities and different mental health issues through an annual conference that I have now presented at officially had a table at. I just did it the third year in a row this year. And the most common challenges I see really are, in the disability category, I would classify it into two different sections. One would be what I would call visible disabilities. The other, what I would call invisible disabilities. And I think this is a really important distinction because people will come to my table and obviously if somebody has cerebral palsy or they lip read or somebody is either nearsighted or is unable to see, you know, there can be that visible aspect to and so immediately they may or may not come to my table. They may try to stay away from it if they feel uncomfortable. It would depend. But I have certainly had lots of people, a number of people at least, with physical disabilities outright come to my table. Often if it's sort of a learning or a social disability, the people may disclose that to me or explain the challenges they've had when they come by and then want to sort of explain what they've experienced. They may or may not have the disabilities themselves. They may have worked with people and had a concern that there's not enough support for people.
In your time with this ministry, is there any particular success moment that stands out for you?
Well, I guess for me, every milestone is like a milestone. So ever since I founded this outreach, I've had an opportunity to continue to contribute. And I mean, one of the main ways that we do this is through the website. And, you know, I've had people make different contributions, their testimonies. You know, I've done a few reviews of different books and movies and things like that. But really, I feel like a lot of the real successes, oddly enough, in my life came through what appear like apparent failures. So what is odd is as I've said, I never made it through Teachers College, but ended up becoming an educational assistant and, you know, the developmental service worker program. But also how I ended up forming this came through me trying to bring the concept of disabilities to people of faith for several years and having a lot of doors shut. So it really, I think it was through that it kind of dawned on me eventually that I needed to form, that this was, I didn't need to kind of latch on to any other ministry for this, that this was worthy of its own outreach. She's so little and humble, but I do want to mention St. Therese in this because her whole purpose is the little way, you know, the whole aspect that no matter how apparent a failure may look, that God can work through that. He can work through that. And so in my life, that's really a testimony that this came about through so many things that looked like failures and then God kind of turned them inside out and they turned into successes.
So what message would you send to the community about the need for people with disabilities to be included in faith and just in the community?
That's a really good question. I had the opportunity to take an online course several years back, and in the online course, there was a lot of reflection and discussion on how people with disabilities could be better integrated into the faith communities. And, you know, obviously, one of the most obvious examples is accommodation. You know, and this is a very sort of cursory kind of, but I mean, let's just, you know, in the church, is the parish accessible? Is it wheelchair accessible? Or do they have closed captioning? Do they have the ability to cater? Do they have opportunities for individuals with parents that have, you know, children with autism to feel more welcomed into the parish or the community? So all these things, accommodations is very important. But again, I think it goes beyond that. I think it's that people should make that, if people start to understand these things, that they become there better aware of how to bring the people with disabilities, not only in terms of how can I reach them, as I said earlier, but how can they become leaders in their faith.
So how can people go about finding out more about your ministry?
Well, there's essentially probably, if they go to my website, there is, the website is actually Therese'sDisabilityGiftedness.com.
Thank you very much.
In this segment of our show, I'll be chatting with John Aslan. We'll be sharing his story of disability life. So tell me a little bit about your disability story and how yoga has impacted your life.
So I am a double amputee above knee and missing one finger on each hand. I have been this way since birth. I was 6 months old when I was amputated as a result of a birth defect. I was a hemimelia. Yoga has just recently, in the last 2 years, become a part of my lifestyle. It's actually been since I had met Diane.
So, can you tell me a little bit about how you coped with being an amputee growing up and what challenges presented themselves?
Growing up, I moved around a little bit before I came to Windsor. I moved here in 1990. And as a kid, I didn't really think about it too much. I used to run around without my prosthetics on and play with the neighbor kids, went to school. I guess I had, when I first went to elementary school here in Windsor, I gave a presentation to the school explaining my disability, which I have no recollection of doing. But I guess that probably really helped the transition with the kids there.
So Diane told me recently that you have a penchant for handstands in particular in your yoga practice.
Yeah, in my practice, inversions are my favorite. Diane may have mentioned something that we talk about is body privilege. So being a double amputee, most of my body is my upper body. So I have it makes it easier for me to be able to flip upside down, basically. And I have a lot of fun doing the inversions, handstands, headstands, things like that.
So in demonstrating the techniques to those who might not be as familiar with amputations as a condition, do you find that they're learning anything about it?
Yes, actually. Diane helped me when I took her yoga training by recording some of my practice when we were doing it in class and putting that out online for her followers to see, which was something that I had asked her to do because I wanted to raise more awareness about what people with different abilities can do. So what I'm actually recognizing is now that it's a year and a half after that video has been posted, it is still getting shares today, and I'm still getting comments about it, which means people still want to see it, and they're recognizing that things can change.
So do you find there's enough integration for people with disabilities in practices like yoga?
No. That's a short answer. No, I don't think that there is. There's definitely, at least in the 2 years that I've been involved in it, which is very limited compared to many, I am seeing a shift in the positive way where the studios are trying to be more proactive. And a lot of the studios, especially in the Windsor area, are starting to offer an accessible yoga as one of their classes that they have. I haven't had an opportunity to actually participate in these classes, but my general opinion of it is I find it very difficult for somebody who is able-bodied to tell a person with a disability how to move their body.
So, how would you suggest that these practitioners get around the challenges that come with telling someone with a disability they have to move a certain way if, for example, they can't physically do it?
Well, I would hope that they would actually be working with their client or student to and listen to them to help understand and to direct a program that would be best suited for those individuals. A lot of yoga practices are done in a group, but that doesn't mean that you can't still individualize certain steps of it or have specific cues for even if it is just one individual.
So, since you took up the practice, has there been any success you've experienced that you'd like to share?
With one of my students, yeah. The first actual organized class that I taught was a chair yoga program that was meant for accessibility at PureCycle in Lakeshore. And one of my students there, I had two amputees, three or four able bodies, and somebody who was in a power chair. And it was a great variety of people for me to be able to work with and to learn from as a first class. But one of my students, who's an amputee, was having some trouble with coping with the new lifestyle that they have because their amputation is relatively new. It's been only the last couple of years. And after a couple of weeks in my class, she actually felt very comfortable, so much so that she took her prosthetic off in class, which is the first time that they have ever done that in public.
So if you could send any message to the community about the need for greater inclusion in yoga and life in general for people with disabilities, what would you say?
Talk to the people that can understand and know exactly what's going on. There's a lot of different communities out there when it comes to disability. So having a diverse group of various abilities can really help to shed light on where there might be some shortcomings, if there are any. I find that even myself, involved with the various groups that I am, there are still some things that I'm not aware of that somebody else might have a challenge with dealing with, because my challenges are different. So it helps everybody to be able to learn from a situation like that.
Liked, thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Yeah, absolutely, Cam. Thanks for having me.
Of course.
HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned. Brain injury is the leading killer and disabler of people under the age of 44 and kills more people under the age of 20 than any other causes combined. Texting or talking on a cell phone while operating a motorized vehicle can lead to serious car crashes, brain injuries, or death. Take the pledge and help put a stop to distracted driving. Go to leavethephonealone.ca to make a pledge to drive only and never text. Everyone deserves to travel on our roads and communities without the fear of a distracted driver.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that provides recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard from George Eyre from St. Therese's Vision for Disability Giftedness and from John Aslan, an amputee with a passion for yoga. In this segment of our show, we'll hear from Emanuela Chandra. We'll be sharing a little bit about her family story disability life. So, you mentioned to me that your mother had an injury of sorts. Can you tell me a little about that?
So, my mom was walking across the street and right in front of our house, and they were fixing the roads. They were redoing, I think, like the pipes underneath the road, and it was all torn up, and a backhoe was backing up. as she was crossing the street. And normally these things have like the beeping, you know, to warn people when it's backing up. And it was faulty. And she walked right into it as it was backing up. So she got a brain injury, a lot of broken bones. She was in a coma for months. And then she had to, once she was out of the coma, then she had to like relearn, you know, walking and all that kind of stuff. So she's doing good now, like in comparison to what they, you know, said how she was going to heal. But she's doing good. She's very positive though, and I attribute her healing process to her faith.
So, at the time, can you tell me a little bit about how your family felt being told that there was essentially no hope?
You know, it was a tough time for her, for all of us. She was just getting separated from my father at the time. So there wasn't really a family dynamic to begin with at that point. And I was a teenager. I was 15. So I was already confused about life in general. So for me, I just felt really lost because my father wasn't around because they were separated and I didn't have her. I have two older brothers, so they were 16 and 17, something like that. We're all close in age. And we didn't get along because no one's policing us. So it was a tough time for us as kids to deal with that.
So when she did start to recover and came out of the coma, can you tell me a little bit about your own reaction?
You know, it's hard to, like, I've always had hope that she was going to be okay. And I know they kept saying that, you know, she might not be talking ever again and she might not be walking ever again. But I never let that get into my mind. I never let that even form as a reality of thought. So when she was in the hospital and she couldn't, you know, she's attached to tubes and stuff, I would still talk to her. Even though she couldn't talk back, and I just assumed she could hear me, and the words were going in somehow. So I think that's, you know, for all of us, it was all about just keeping the faith of that she's going to be okay.
So you'd mentioned she's a person of faith. How has that played a role in her recovery since?
Very much so. So, like, she's really close with the church. The church helped us a lot as kids. They would help bring us food and stuff because we didn't really have anyone taking care of us so much. So they helped a lot. And then now she still goes to church. Obviously, with the virus situation, it's tough for all of us. But that is her pillar of strength. Like, that's her normalcy. Like, she goes there, she sees, you know, the priests and the nuns, and she feels that community. And I feel like that's the hard part now, is the community, the lack of community, especially for a lot of elders and a lot of people with disabilities and that sort of thing. We need to be with each other. And, I feel that the praying and she meditates every day, she does the rosary every day, and I think that that helps to keep her brain healthy. You know, she's 77 now. Well, this year she will be. And she's a healthy 77.
So, if you could send any message to the community about the need to keep hope and faith in difficult times, what would you say?
Your thoughts are things. So, if you have negative thoughts, and if you feel that you're not going to heal, that gives your body signals. But if you have the thought that you are going to heal, visualize yourself healthy, that will create a cascade of hormones in your body. It will actually create a physical thing. I think it all starts with your mindset and your faith in trusting that you're going to be okay. It's huge. So that's the advice I would give, is keep your thoughts positive. And even if it's obvious that whatever, you broke a foot, okay, your foot is broken, but focus on that. Focus on the recovery. Visualize yourself walking on your foot again. You know, that sort of thing. That's how your body's going to get stronger.
So, to change gears just a little bit, during this time of quarantine and isolation, how have you been dealing with the whole mental health strain that comes along with it?
It's difficult. Like, for me, personally, I noticed it for me, and just because I'm a yoga teacher, so I'm always around my students, and I'm getting reciprocal energy from them, and not having that is difficult for me. Like I said, my mom not going to church is I can tell like she needs some community as well. It's hard. I know of people who are having issues. I have one friend who had his friend move in with him just for this quarantine time because he knew he had mental health issues and depression. But not everyone has that. Not everyone has that stability in their life where they have someone that they can go to. So the quarantine is really hard for a lot of people. I mean, good thing we have Facebook and social media and people can, you know, hopefully find someone that they can, you know, type with, you know, and maybe, you know, do Zoom calls or whatever, but it's just not the same as being in person with someone. I know that's going to have lasting effects on some people, unfortunately, but we have to follow the rules of not being able to be with each other.
But just because there's a physical space doesn't mean that,
yeah.
Like, thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure.
Faith, my friends, can mean the difference between recovering and living a full life and just giving up on yourself. See, cases where there's a 1% chance of survival, somebody, somewhere, has come through it. Even if there's statistically no chance of survival, oftentimes you'll find someone, somewhere, is that unaccountable case wherein they just had enough drive and enough motivation to live, to keep on going. Times such as these, we've all seen a lot of hardship. We've seen economic turmoil. We've heard of cases where people have been affected. It's hard not to say, this is going to be the entire future. The world's never going to recover. We're never going to heal. But at that point, we have just allowed the doubt to overtake us, really. But as a people, my friends, we can do so much better. We just take a minute to explore the possibilities of life. We say to ourselves, this can be done. Proceed on the premise that there is hope for tomorrow. Chances are we will find it. Truth of the matter is, it all begins with someone having faith in themselves, whether they have a disability or not, and with another standing beside them and saying, I recognize that you have gifts and potentials, and I'm going to be someone who stands beside you. For the truth is, no one gets through life entirely on their own. It's just not how it works, my friends. But at times when we need to ask for help, we need to have a little trust, there's no shame in that. We can actually find a source of renewed strength when we come to that place. We don't necessarily carry all the weight of the world by ourselves. Fact is, people are stronger when they recognize there is a great big community out there who, in many cases, do have really high hopes and expectations for everyone, including those with disabilities. And if we expect great things of the disability population, chances are we will not be disappointed. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal, so get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.